since I forgot to mention it, I would like to add that the other story that was in the news that was in Times related was that 800 people have now died as a result of the heat wave hitting India. Yosha said that the sun's energy, this is in fact actually Yawa, but that it would have a burning effect on individuals, and so that the heat of the sun will actually increase during these final days, and it could be a function of radiation, or the poles could actually switch, as which we're actually seeing now in the South Atlantic. But could be from a host of other reasons in terms of solar activity cycles. But nonetheless, in India, some 800 people have now died from a heat wave. We've got a world that is falling apart at the seams. I would like to return back to the 23rd Psalm. Let's pick it up at the beginning of this psalm, and let's talk about what is being conveyed to us. It begins a song, which is a mizmor, which are lyrics set to a melody, of Dode, which means beloved. He is better known, although less accurately known, as David. It's interesting that he would be called David because there is no V in Hebrew. You know, one thing for absolute certain, he could not have been David. There you go through the Hebrew alphabet. There is no letter V nor any sound capable of being expressed alphabetically in the 22 characters of the Hebrew alphabet that would convey a V. So he could not have been David. Now, the Y, the I at the end of David, is in making it two syllables, is a function of the fact that when we see DWD written hundreds of times in the Torah prophets and Psalms, there is one time in I think a fairly obscure place that the Masoretic text has it DWYD, which could be Doed. The Hebrew wa conveys the O sound about 90% of the time. It conveys the U sound about 10% of the time. So the one time that it was written, D-W-Y-D, could be Duid or Doed. But when you find the writing to be hundreds of times as D-W-D, which is just Dode, then there really isn't much of a question as to how the name should be pronounced. And it means beloved. So, a song of Dode, and it begins with the single most important word or name, depending on how you choose to view it. It's a name based upon a verb, which is a word. If you're going to make a statement about who you are, why you are, what you think, what you've accepted, what you want, there's no better word or name to begin your declaration with than the one that Dode chose, Yahweh. He did not say the Lord. He said Yahweh. So you'd have to ask yourself, why did every English Bible translation change Yahweh to the Lord, and then present what they then published as the Word of God, when that's not what he inspired Dode to write? How can you change what he inspired as God and call what you have the inerrant Word of God? Unless you're just being wholly duplicitous. So this is a song of Dode, of love. Yahweh is my shepherd. It's really just Yahweh followed by the Hebrew word for shepherd. The shepherd reference has two connotations. One is that the Hebrew word ra'ah means to see, to have a proper perspective, and to have your ability to observe from the proper perspective lead to understanding. That is the full meaning of ra'ah when the ah sound is conveyed through the aleph. In this case, ra'ah is written with the ain, which is drawn in the form of an eye. And still, when particularly with the eye, conveys all of the aspects of observation. A shepherd observes his sheep. A shepherd guides their sheep by being particularly observant. A shepherd is able to nurture his sheep and tend to his sheep and protect his sheep when he's focused on his sheep and focused on the surrounding area, being especially observant. The more observant a person is, the better shepherd they become. And Dode knew this because he was a shepherd. Further, ra'ah, written with the ain as shepherd, means to guide, to nurture, to tend to protect. So this is quite the declaration. The most famous shepherd of all time, Dode, is telling us that Yahweh is his shepherd, the one who nurtures him, the one who protects them, the one that pays attention to him and observes everything that he's doing, the one that keeps him out of harm's way, the one that protects him, cares for him, guides him, instructs him. He says, Yahweh is my shepherd. I shall not be diminished. The antithesis of that is, I shall be increased. As is the case with the children of the covenant, particularly on Shavuah, we are increased, we are empowered, we are enriched. Yahweh wishes to make us ever more like him. He's going to bring us out of the confines of 3.5 dimensions into the enormously greater environs of 7 dimensions. He is going to empower us, increase our capability. And so that's the antithesis of shall not be diminished. But just on the face of it, to not be diminished, if Yahweh is your shepherd, if he is your father, if you are being nurtured by him, protected by him, and guided by him, then you will not be diminished. Your soul will not cease to exist. And all of those who are not led by, taught by, guided by, directed by Yahweh through his Torah guidance, their soul will be diminished at the end of their life. So this is a declaration of not coming to an end, of an ongoing life. And this is not an ongoing life in Sheol, because that would be separated from Yahweh. This is an ongoing life, a continuance of life in the presence of Yahweh, with Yahweh continuing to act as shepherd, to guide, to lead Dode to all of the really great places, this time in his universe. He says, in an abode, a pasture, a residence, a habitation and home. And abode is from na'a, which is from, and that's N-W-H, which is from na'a, which is N-Aleph, hey. It means to become fittingly beautiful. So in an abode that is fittingly beautiful, growing and anointed, dash A, flourishing and thriving, covered in oil in preparation for a feast. This is from dasha, which means to bring forth life, which grows and is flourishing and abundant. It's related to dash N, which is often translated anointed, which means set apart, equipped, and prepared to serve, to be covered, to be healthy, and to thrive. One of the things that I was about doing this morning was trying to properly render Dashen, because Dode will later use it again to say that he is Dashen with olive oil. And so you immediately think, because it's Dashen with olive oil, that he is anointed. So I began to look at everything associated with Teshin. It says, which means you're covered in preparation for a festival feast designed to cleanse and to liberate. Yeah, so Yahweh covers us in the cleansing and healing in nature and the luminous nature of olive oil in preparation for his Moed Mikre, his festival feast, which are designed to cleanse us, to make us perfect, and to liberate us, to free us, to be in his company. It also means you provide the choicest, most nourishing, richest, and most delightful food to consume. Dashin. It means that you facilitate vigorous health, abundant prosperity, tremendous new growth, total freedom, complete satisfaction, and a stalwart attitude. Opening and accepting, opening us up to this opportunity and accepting us. Stalwart attitude means resolute, absolute confirmed, convinced, unwavering attitude, which is really what the children of the covenant come to possess. So I did some more research on Dashan. And one of the things that I came to realize is that there are places in the Torah and in the prophets where Dashin is used interchangeably with Torah, Mishpat, and Chok. Those are three of the four words that Dod uses throughout his analysis of how to observe the Torah in the 119th Psalm. Torah is the source from which teaching, guidance, and direction flow. A mishpat is the means that Yahweh uses to exercise good judgment and to resolve disputes. And chok are those inscriptions which are cut into stone for the purpose of cutting us into the covenant relationship. And dashin is used synonymously, interchangeably with those three words. For example, dashin is used in the Devarim, words 33:2, to address the purpose of the upright pillar of fire, of light. It says, at his, Yahweh's right hand, fire. To be a dashin for them, that would be Yisrael, in journey. So, the dashin, to be dashin, is a derivative of being in the presence of Yahweh's upright pillar of light. So what does the word dashin mean? It can't mean anoint when it's used in the context it is in Devarim, Deuteronomy 33:2. It says, at Yahweh's right hand fire, to be a dashin for them, speaking of Yisrael and journeying. So the dashin, which is the consequence or the benefit of Yahweh's upright pillar of light and fire, has to be guidance, enlightenment, empowerment, leadership, direction, is all the things that the dashin can be. Then in Daniel 6:6 we find, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel except we find it against him concerning the dashin of his God. Now, Daniel was not anointed. And so speaking of the dashin of his God, it's got to be the instructions of his God, the teachings of his God, the guidance of his God. I mean, there it's just used synonymously with Torah. Also in Daniel 7:25 we read, and he, speaking of the Torahless one, shall speak great, great words against the Most High, and he shall wear out those set apart unto the Almighty, and think to change the times, which would be the Moed, and dashin. So, what is the dashin? If it isn't, you're changing Yahweh's Moed, what else would be important to change? Yahweh's instructions? Yahweh's terms and conditions of the covenant? Yahweh's teachings? Yahweh's Torah? So, Here, Dashen is used to speak of Yahweh's instructions, that which is germane to the Torah. In throughout Proverbs, Dashen is used to express the condition of a soul. Well, souls are spiritual. They can't be anointed. They can't be covered in oil. But it expresses the nature of a soul under certain circumstances when that individual is paying attention to what Yahweh is offering. In Proverbs 15:30, Dashen is the result of the light of the eyes, rejoicing the heart, their inner nature. In other words, what you observe makes you causes you to rejoice, and the good message, which would be the healing and beneficial message of the Torah, makes the bones that dash in. You know, that's the bones here would be your backbone, the very essence of who you are that makes you upright. You know, then Proverbs 28:25, he who puts his trust in Yahweh shall be, Dashen, be enlightened, freed, empowered, enriched, nourished, all of those kinds of things. So, as I continue to study Dashen, we'll have a better definition for it than this idea that it means to anoint. So, it says, in an abode, growing is a reasonable translation, flourishing, thriving, prepared, liberated, properly instructed, properly guided. So, in an abode, properly guided and growing, he enables me to stretch out and recline, while appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. A really interesting concept here. Rabas Ani. It says that, first of all, that Yahweh is providing a stable for his flock from Rabas, for us to sit down or lie down. But it's this idea that that we're just going to be all laying down on comfy couches is not what the word means at all. The word was specifically used to talk about coming back to a place, and after you have gone from a long walk, or you've been out on a strenuous journey of discovery of some point, and after the exertion of energy, where you've gone out and explored something, considered something, witnessed something, observed something, that then you come back home to a place that's designed to rest after having exerted oneself. So it kind of describes what I am expecting to happen in eternity with Yahweh, where we are all individually and collectively going to go out and explore, going to imagine, going to create, going to learn, going to witness the wonders of life and of the new creation of a new universe. And then we're going to come back, particularly during the celebrations of the Moed Mikra, and we're all going to share what we learned. We're going to enjoy reflecting on what we have discovered. So there is a lot we can learn from Dashen. So in an abode, growing and flourishing, freed and prepared, properly instructed, healthy and thriving. He enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately, sheltered after exerting myself. It's really key to see, I think, this Hebrew word rabas as a reflection of the Shabbat, even during eternity. What I think God is saying here is just as he exerted himself and enjoyed it for 6 days, he rested on the seventh. Just as he has encouraged us to be about whatever we wish to do 6 days a week, on the seventh we should rest and reflect on our relationship. So I expect it even in eternity that during these seven Moed Mikre, we're still going to gather together. We're still going to rest and reflect at home in Yahweh's family, in his home, on what we have been about. what we've been doing, what we have enjoyed, what we have imagined, what we have witnessed, what we have learned, sharing it with one another. And I think that is what is being conveyed by Ravaz there. It's not inactivity. It is a period of time of rest and reflection after considerable activity. So it describes, I think, the pace and the pulse, if you will, of life as Yahweh conceived it. And it's in this place which is protected that we're all going to come back to enjoy this. And so here the word, the verb Ravaz, was written with the hifl stem, which reveals that the subject, who is Yah, causes the object, Dod, to participate in the action, which is being sheltered and protected in his home. While the imperfect conjugation tells us that this restful condition after exertion will be ongoing. So, in an abode growing and freed, flourishing and thriving, properly instructed, he enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately after having exerted myself above the Almighty's waters. Now, waters is the dual of waters. It's Mayim, and it is used in a singular sense, such as Elohim. Elohim is the plural of El, which is derived from Eloah. And just as waters are, it's a plural word, not a, it's a dual world word, not a plural word. So Elohim is very similar to that, which means it has dual, a dualistic nature, even though it is often used in this singular sense. So Mayim and Elohim are similar in that regard. And means that, and he's speaking of waters. Water is necessary for all life. Water is the universal cleanser. And water really is the nursery for the conception of stars and the conception of life. So we are going to be hovering above the Almighty's waters. Then it says, calm and composed. Manuka. Manuka means tranquil, after coming to rest with a focus on the space which is now being occupied. So after you've gone off and you've seen all of the exciting stuff, you're going to come back, you're going to be calm and composed, tranquil. You're going to be focused now on the place that you're now occupying, which is Yahweh's home. It is to, Manuka is to be active and to be moving, even though there is a calm, reflective nature. It speaks of someone who has extended themselves, but now has returned satisfied and content. It is from Manoka, Manoach, which means reposed, a state of being calm, composed, and collected. It's the English words derived from the Latin, which is the Latin word reposare, which is how we get reposed, expresses the ability to pause in the midst of extensive force. So as we are empowered and enriched to go off and explore the universe, we're going to have, even with enormous power and capability, we're still going to have the capacity to slow down and pause, to reflect. Just as Yahweh created this concept of a Shabbat. You know, if you were going all the time for eternity, you know, the going might become wearisome. And if you were simply reflecting all the time, the reflecting might get boring. But this combination of exploring and then reflecting, and then pondering and then exploring again, and coming up with a hypothesis and going out to examine it, or conceiving an idea and going off to see if you can bring it to fruition. You know, where imagination becomes as big a part of how we invest our time, which is limitless, as is the actual exploration of that which is matter or energy. All of that is being conveyed here. Calm and composed. The ability to to combine intensive power and capability with the ability to stop and just reflect. And it says, he leads me to the light, Nahal Ani. He guides me toward the goal of enlightenment and being unburdened. And he does so with great care. He brings me to a place where I am revived and cared for, where I am nourished, where I am refreshed with water after a long journey. Here this word, Na'al, is associated with Na'ir, the Almighty's light, and with Nahar, a stream of radiant light, where one's burdens are lightened, flowing away. Used in the imperfect, the leading continues, and the light endures forever, and the peel stem, this active state is brought about by the subject, who is God, on behalf of the object, who is God, as a result of the relationship between them. So we're learning a lot about what Dod is saying about eternity. Now, I have said on many occasions, and I appear to have been wrong, that God, I've said that God doesn't tell us much about eternity. You know, he leaves it to our comfort level, really. You know, is what I think it's a Glenn who has said it so many times. He says, I know that eternity is spending time with Yahweh, and that's good enough for me. And that's good enough for me, too. But, you know, I'm still inquisitive. I want to know what can be known. And, you know, Yahweh tells us that we're going to be made more like him. He took Abraham to the light of the stars in the spiritual realm to show him what he was inheriting. So I can make that connection between the physical limitations and the lack of limitations that exist as energy, as light, and of being enlightened and empowered, which is the promise of Shavuah. I can make those connections, and I can realize that Yahweh has said that he's going to create a new universe, so that the obvious implications are so we can be witnesses. So we're no longer exposed going back in time to those things that we did or others did that were painful. And that he said he's going to give us, he's going to write his Torah inside of us, which is going to make our time in eternity different in the relationship than it is now. And that now we have the opportunity to reject or ignore or even corrupt his Torah teaching. In eternity, he's going to write a perfect copy of his teaching inside of us, which is going to guide our actions and choices. So there's a lot of things you can derive. Roy has been instrumental in helping us understand how Yahweh, in all likelihood, is in the seventh dimension. And he's going to take us to that place. And each step along the way, we become infinitely more powerful and capable than we are stuck in the third dimension. Or even as part of a fourth dimension. So there's a lot of things I can envision, but it appears that through this, the 23rd Psalm, that Dod isn't speaking of being a sheep. He's not speaking of a grassy open area. He's not speaking of a stable. He's not speaking of these mundane concepts, but instead has chosen words which convey not what is or was for him, but what will be. He's given us a window into eternity. He's told us that in eternity, we're going to receive guidance. We're going to find everything that Yah says nurturing. We're going to be liberated. We're going to find total and complete satisfaction. We're going to be exerting ourselves, going places, doing things, out on long voyages of discovery. And then we're going to be coming back to reflect on what we have witnessed, what we've created, what we've learned. And that while we're there, we're going to be in God's sheltered place. And so the pattern of the Shabbat prevails. Now, that's sort of what I had envisioned, although it's more structured than in terms of more formalized, more concrete. in terms of the use of nuach, of this abode, which is a habitation and home that is befittingly beautiful, and of dashe, that which grows and flourishes and is abundant and is satisfying and is liberated, and that prepares us and enlightens us and opens us up to all of these experiences. And then Ravas, that we're going to come together and lie down and after reaching out and reflecting upon a long voyage, you know, in a shelter for those to rest who have exerted themselves, all in association with the Almighty's waters, the common denominator for life and for cleansing. Calm and composed, tranquil. But now, composed, calm, collected, having the ability to pause, to rest and reflect, to Shabbat, if you will, after engaging our tremendously wonderful and inherited capability in the seventh dimension, which is why he says it leads me to the light. It's the light of Yahweh that enables us to have these capabilities, to go out and journey to the far reaches of the universe, and then to head home where his light shines. This Nahal, he leads me to the light, is interesting because we're not only does Yahweh tell us that the thing that caused Abraham to finally understand what was being offered to him as an inheritance relative to the covenant. And for Yahweh to say, now with that understanding and your response to what you're being offered, I'm going to equate that to vindication, to uprightness, to acceptance. He took Abraham to the stars to witness the nature of light and to explore the universe. As well as, he said, to Shamaim, to his spiritual home. This is very similar to what Dode is talking about here with Na'al. He leads me to the light. He guides me to the goal of enlightenment and of being unburdened with great care. He brings me to a place where I am revived and cared for with nourishing food and refreshing water after a long journey. As I said, this word is related to Na'ir, the Almighty's light, and Na'ar, the stream of radiant light, where burdens are lightened and flowing away. Well, there's two connotations there, both of which are important. One is which is when Yahweh covers us in his light with the set-apart spirit's garment of light. When we're flooded with light, our flaws, the darkness that is part of our nature, instantly disappears. Now we are only light and nothing other than light. But beyond that, when you are light, the burdens of the flesh, of the material world, are taken away. So there's a combination of insights here, both of which are important. Hello, Tommy. Welcome to Shattering Mist. I understand you have a comment on Psalm 23.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you're having one of those goosebump moments right now, because I am.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, this is really exciting.
When we were listening, no one knows was a good shepherd. Of course, he would use this analogy to compare, you know, to show us what the great shepherd's going to be like in eternity. I think it's blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's blowing my mind too, and I think that's exactly it. He used the metaphor of shepherd related to Yahweh to tell us what the great shepherd was going to be like and what eternity was going to be like with him. It's blowing my mind too. Rather than mundane and equating us to sheep in a pasture, he's really telling us this is the best and the most complete insight I've ever read as to what eternity is going to be like in Yahweh's company. stunning. We just lost Tommy. He had some issues. But that's exactly my reaction. That's the reason why yesterday, as we were talking to Roy about what he expected eternity to be based upon his insights into dimensions in Yahweh's teaching, that's exactly what the 23rd Psalm is describing. And it just makes sense. I mean, here is this powerful psalm, probably the best known of all of Dode's psalms. In fact, unequivocally the best known. And it talks about what it's like if Yahweh is your shepherd, what life is like, what you're going to be doing, what you're going to be experiencing. And since Dode never experienced Yahweh as a shepherd in life, in the sense of Dode being a sheep that was led to water and grass and protection and a shelter and a, you know, a stable by Yahweh, he's describing what he knows is going to happen in eternity with Yahweh. When Yahweh is your shepherd, you're going to be magnified in this way. You're going to be liberated in this way. You're going to be inspired and enriched and enlightened in this way. You're led to the light. You're unburdened. You're freed. You're instructed. You're guided. And then as you go off on these marvelous and energetic voyages of discovery, as you conceive new ideas and experiment, as you go off and learn and are witness and exposed to things as a group or individually, you then come back into Yahweh's home, back into his light to share, to reflect on what you've learned, to cause that whole experience to be far more enriching, far more wonderful, far more joyous, because there's somebody to share it with. Other perspectives to consider, other experiences to be known. And this is the pace, this is the pulse of eternity, of energetic voyage of discovery followed by restful periods of reflection in Yahweh's home. We'll be back tomorrow.